Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So why are you living with your older parents? Or older parents, why are you living with your adult children? Let's talk about the economics of the new intergenerational households, which are on the rise in America. Let's talk about intimacy versus autonomy. Do they compete with each other? 212-433-WNYC. Shana in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Shana. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your situation?
Well, essentially, I'll summarize and then I'll share a little bit more. But I'm staying with my parents for economic reasons. I just finished a master's in higher education administration from an Ivy League university. But I'm staying with them because I'm trying to understand the industry and get economic support while doing so. But the other piece that I don't necessarily tell people is for emotional support, where I'm with a set of folks who understands that I work hard, I'm smart, I do what I need to do. I don't understand what's happening with the economy or what kind of worker people seek. Even though I do my job, maybe I turn people off with tattoos and funky outfits. They are compassionate and provide a lot of emotional support, and that's kind of why I'm staying.
So this is, for you, still the dynamic of you're the adult child moving back in with them in their house for now, right?
Right, yes.
Yeah, and so you get the emotional support as well as a little economic space as you take your next step. Thank you very much for starting us off. And Ellen in Roslyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Leonard.
It's Brian, but that's okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's too early. I can't say it's too early in the morning. I moved in with my mother temporarily when I sold my home, when I hadn't yet sold my home, but it was post-divorce and my ex was still in the home. But then, actually, one night, it was actually a night of a book launch, my book launch, my mother broke her pelvis. And I just couldn't leave her when she got out of rehab. It was an ample-sized house, and I was concerned that Mom wasn't going to eat, and Mom wasn't going to have somebody to look after her. And I do have a full-time job. But I stayed, and it's now around 4 years. And I feel blessed. She's 93 years old. Mm. I get to see the dignity of old age, the indignities of old age. I hope I give her emotional support. I make certain that I eat a certain number of meals with her weekly. I could move out financially. It's not even a financial thing. I just don't think Mom would have done as well. I guess I could sort of take a little credit for that. I don't think my mother would have done as well had I not been there.
Did you just mean to say indignities of old age when you said dignities of old age, or did you mean to say there are both?
There are absolutely both, when the body declines and the mind does not. I mean, and we are all, I'm a baby boomer. You recognize certain things and you provide your parents with the dignity that perhaps they wouldn't have if I had made different choices. So I believe Mom has a very dignified existence, and I'm very respectful of her. But there are certain custodial functions that, by dint of living in the same household with somebody and caring for them, you see up close and personal, which you otherwise would be clueless about.
Right. And your situation is the opposite, it sounds like, of how it winds up frequently with a mother and daughter of your age and your mother's age, which is to say she's over 90, but she didn't move in with you. You moved in with her because of your past divorce. I get that. But that's still the situation. You are a kind of older adult living in your mom's house to help take care of her when she's the one who's so old.
Yeah.
And that works for you.
It does, and I feel blessed because you get a view of the world, and you benefit from a relationship that we only have one mother, and I'm very fortunate to have my mother, and I'm very fortunate that mentally she's very sharp as a tack and reads books, etc., and knows more about current events when I come home at night than I do.
tell her to listen very closely to the show and give you a briefing on days that you're out at work. Ellen, thank you.
I absolutely will.
Good luck to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Lynette in Toms River, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lynette.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. What's your story?
So my father passed away 2 years ago, and my mother was living in an independent living place, but she had never lived alone in her life. She was from the generation that married my father, lived with her parents, moved into my father's home, and never lived alone. So she totally did not have the skills to live by herself. She didn't drive. She never paid a bill. And then it got to the point where I was visiting all the time and managing her life. But she was very, very lonely. She was very, very isolated. So we decided to move her into our house and take care of her in her later years.
Lynette, do you have a tension between this closeness and any desire for autonomy on either of your parts?
Yes. It was a difficult transition. It wasn't an easy transition. I live with my husband, and now my 22-year-old son is living with us after college. But, you know, we had been empty nesters for a little portion of our lives when my three boys went to college, and we were enjoying that. And then when my mother moved in with us, it was another person in our marriage. It wasn't even a kid who was used to the dynamic of our marriage or anything. We had this outside person who was observing our lives again. And it took a little bit of adjustment, and it was almost like a child sort of situation where I was torn between giving attention to my mother and giving attention to my husband, and what part of this does he play. So it was a complicated transition that I didn't have a guidebook for. We're on the other end of it now. It's not all rosy, but we went through some tough times.
Yeah, and I guess if you and your husband had reached that empty nest stage, you said you were enjoying it. Many couples do, where you're almost like you're in your young, young married, pre-children phase again, where your time is more your own once you're done with your work days, and, you know, you can go out and play, and you can plan your vacations that aren't just in the school vacation weeks and things like that. And now you've got them back on both generation sides.
Right. It's almost like you've lived my life. But that's exactly what happened. My mother is afraid to be left alone in the house, so whenever we go out, we have to arrange for somebody to come over and watch her. And so any spontaneity is gone. If we want to go out to dinner or we just want to go away for a weekend, we can't. You know, everything has to be planned. And so it is, you know, that we do have the blessing of living with my mother and being there for her. But there definitely is things that people need to consider that I didn't really think about completely before I made this decision. I probably would have done the same thing, but these were things that I didn't realize were going to come up.
Lynette, thank you very much. Good luck to all three of the generations in your household. And Louise in North Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Louise.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Brian. We live in a multi-generational household with our adult son, but I'd like to point out that multi-generational living is the norm for Americans, except for an anomaly period after the 1940s,
right,
which was made possible by the GI Bill.
And Social Security, would you say?
Absolutely. I've done census research going all the way back to the 1700s for my family. And every single generation up until probably the 1940s lived with grandparents, adult children, and children all together. My mother is from Boston, and she grew up in a triple-decker. And those were built specifically to house multi-generational families. And it wasn't until the 1930s and 40s that you began to see single women and single men who could afford to move out on their own because they got Social Security. So thank the Democrats if you have the expectation of living as retired empty nesters, because it's only those sorts of programs that have made this sort of multi-generational living what we consider to be a thing of the past.
And there was rhetoric to that effect back in the day of the debate over Social Security originally. Of course, it was primarily an anti-poverty program And it's been pretty successful at that because there was so much elder poverty. If they had no pensions or if they had no particular means of support once they couldn't work anymore. But it was also intended to provide the dignity of autonomy both to the older seniors and to not tie down the younger adults to have to take care of them and to be able to go out and work so that there's that economic component to it, but also the sort of social and psychological autonomy. You know, that's become accepted, I think, as you say, as a historical anomaly in the post-World War II period. Now it's going back a little bit the other way, probably being driven by economic reasons. And what we don't know is also if it's also being driven by sociological reasons, that people now feel too atomized through being autonomized. You know, are we too disconnected in our little nuclear families and we don't like it as much as we thought we were going to?
Well, the other thing I wanted to point out is that when if you go back and you look at the history of the town you live in, you will probably find workhouses for the indigent elderly, which were the common place that people who had no support, no children, and nobody to, no money would end up. And they'd be full of people in their 60s, their 70s, and even their 80s who were expected to work off the money that was coming from the municipality to pay for their upkeep.
Old-style workfare. Louise, thank you so much. Fascinating call. And we leave it there. You can keep these stories coming on our website. If you want at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show, Intergenerational Living, 21st Century Style.